Good morning. Welcome to the Australian Early Finance Briefing for Friday, the 14th of August, 2020. My name's Nick Hurley here in Melbourne. Starting today with some developments in the logistics of the Chinese iron ore trade, of which Australia completely dominates at the moment. In an effort to wean themselves off Australia, China's approved the building of some new ports that will accommodate the really enormous Valemax iron ore ships. So these ships carry as much as 400,000 tons of iron ore per ship, which is well above the 250,000 tons, the, you know, almost double the ships the Australian exporters use. And obviously one of the key competitive advantages Australia has over Brazil is geography. We're much closer to China. So obviously the bigger the ship, the lower the shipping costs. So this is a way to make Brazil a bit more competitive. They've interestingly mentioned in the Chinese state media that as the bilateral relationship is tense, Australia is not regarded by China as a reliable trading partner. It is necessary for China to remove its reliance on Australian iron ore. That was Yantai Media Group. Australia's government-owned broadband network, the NBN, had their results on Tuesday. They were fairly positive after many years of cost blowouts and revisions down in projected revenue. However, they have really benefited from the coronavirus. They've got a lot more connections earlier, and they've actually expedited some of the rollout, bringing forward things that were probably going to take a bit longer. Now, interestingly, they've sort of mentioned that they could potentially be using some of the $6 billion they've recently raised on the private debt markets. This is outside of the government funding for potentially an upgrade of the woefully inadequate copper portion of the network. So, cryptically, the CEO mentioned that what we said we would deliver for $51 billion in the corporate plan, we will deliver for $51 billion. So some analysts are reading that as saying, okay, the initial sort of government scope of the project, yes, we're delivering that within the cost. He could just be sort of saying we're going to, you know, work within our budgets and do as what we say we would do. However, yeah, analysts are sort of reading that this could mean that some of that extra money they've raised could be used for improvements to the network. So it's interesting that copper network, which consists of the majority of the connections using the old Telstra sort of phone network, is really inadequate to provide the higher speed, higher margin services. So the ones they can charge more for, you can't actually get on most of the network. So you're sort of limited at most 50 megabits on copper, and you know the markets of standard now is 100 megabit. So of the NBN, there's 11.7 million premises ready to connect. And then the fiber to the node consists of 4.76 million of those. So it would be a huge potential sort of revenue uplift. And I guess if the business case is there, then, you know, now they're sort of fairly independent from government, then that might be a really sensible business decision going forward. Okay, touching upon SPACs, SPACs, which are special purpose acquisition companies. There's something that we don't really see a lot of here in Australia, but they're really big in the US now. Basically, what they're for is, you know, we've known for a long time that, you know, private companies is where there's a lot of potential for good returns. Companies are avoiding initial public offerings for a lot longer. You know, even the tech unicorns are taking longer than expected. So this is a way to tap these private companies through the equity markets. Now, 20% of all IPO issuance this year in the US has actually been these SPACs, and that's triple what it was last year. So yeah, the SPACs have grown from a niche part of equity markets to become a popular alternative route to public markets. So they raise money from investors with the aim of finding a private company to buy. If the sponsors fail to do that within a certain period, the SPAC is dissolved and the money returned to the shareholders. The investment banks are loving them because they do generate thick streams of fee income. And some of the sort of leading investment banks in the US have sort of shuffled a lot of their teams, their equity teams, onto these sort of projects. So they do make slightly less fees than with an IPO, but they do make sort of fee revenue at two stages. So when the SPACs formed and listed, and then the SPACs commonly have to raise additional funds, so they can take a clip of that as well. The biggest SPAC that's been listed this year is one done by Bill Ackman, the big hedge fund manager. He raised $4 billion to hunt for a tech unicorn, and yeah, that's the largest sum ever raised. Now, privately held companies that would have otherwise explored an IPO really like these SPACs because the terms of these sort of acquisitions are done behind closed doors and the price finalized before the deal is announced, as opposed to a normal IPO. The pricing is not really done right till the end, and it's done in a very rapid process. So, you know, unicorn sellers do get a lot of comfort from these sorts of processes. Moving to the markets now, the US session has opened up fairly flat. The S&P up one bit, the NASDAQ up 58. Gold's recovered a little bit more, and silver's up about 3%. The Australian dollar is still trading at about 71.8 US cents. Later today, we have the Reserve Bank Governor Lowe speaking. And that is your update for Friday. Have a great day and see you tomorrow.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. The podcast is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. The values of investments can go up or down, so you may get back less than you initially invest.